Fun, fun, fun. It's the news, according to me. Well, good morning. It is it's Friday morning, Shabbat Shalom. We have January 9th on the plate here this morning, 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 9:03 actually, Eastern Standard Time, and 8:03 Central Standard Time, which is the time zone I am in right now. And we have, just a whole lot of good things going on, a whole lot of weird things going on, as usual, in the state of Minnesota. But we'll talk about some of those things a little bit. I do want to talk about some financial things. This is Financial Friday, so we'll be talking about some things there. We're just having some fun with that. And we have, this is the show where, for those of you who have never listened to me before, and apparently there's some new listeners, almost every day there we get some new people listening. They don't always come back. They don't always subscribe. I don't expect that. I don't expect you to always do that, by the way. But I do appreciate it when you do. I have appreciate those who listen to the show. Listen to me rant for a while, just get some things off my chest, and let me know, just to kind of blow kind of the stuff out of my brain. I'm not a doctor, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a financial counselor, and I'm not a geopolitical expert, nor am I an economic expert. However, we're going to be talking a little bit about geopolitics and economics today, and some of the things that are going on. Just a kind of a general overview of the nation, the state of the union, the state of the economy, and the state of the world economic situation, and what's happening there. Now, of course, we're also going to talk a little bit about this thing going on in Minnesota, and I guess there was another couple of people were shot, not killed, but I believe two people were shot by some agents somewhere on the West Coast, I believe. It might have been Oregon. However, what's happening in Minnesota is it is a mess. And the local government there, the governor, the mayor, and some other politicians there and some bureaucrats are not de-escalating. They're certainly not de-escalating. They're not adding to any kind of help whatsoever in terms of what's going on there. And Trump derangement syndrome is real. It is serious, and it is it's a horrifying thing. The way people are overreacting, reacting, the sensitivity and the reactive level for some people is just off the charts. And I don't, you know, what can you say about it? In the meantime, we do have something in my cup this morning. I have chai with coconut cream creamer. Last night we went out for ice cream. It's just been foggy and kind of drizzly here. We didn't even go to the beach yesterday. Temperature wasn't that bad, but there was no sunshine, it's kind of nice when you're at the beach if there's no sun, believe it or not. It's not as intense. You can kind of, as long as if it's warm. It was kind of drizzly and foggy, just kind of a gloomy day. And of course, the wife is a little under the weather, so there was she was just not feeling like getting out doing much, which I understand. I just went through all that. I didn't want to do anything either. Last week, it was just kind of that, you know, you just want to lay in bed, you just want to sleep it off, and you want to get some rest, you want to, you know, whatever you want to do. Moving around is just not something you're thrilled about, and it's been kind of an interesting couple of weeks away. And I finally was able to kind of get up and just kind of get on it, kind of get some things done. Did a lot of things on the motorhome yesterday. I ended up. Besides that, let me move on one more step here. I got a backup cup. My backup cup is still Chick-fil-A sweet tea. However, there is a little bit of, what I didn't know is we had a couple of frozen peaches that I didn't realize my wife brought some frozen peaches along in case I wanted to make sweet peach tea. But there was a couple of peaches left. She was putting some peaches into one of her little dessert things. And I said, hey, where'd you get those peaches? And so we put a couple little chunks in my little cup here. And I have to say, that's some pretty good peachy tea right there. So it's got a little peach flavor there, it's a little hint of peach, which is good. Anyway, that's my backup cup. We have we'll be heading out today, I believe, this afternoon sometime. not sure we're going to see any sunshine. We might see some sunshine just before noon, according to the weather forecast, but might take the dogs to the, there's another different dog beach we might take them to try that one out. It's actually a dog park. It's not actually out on the ocean. It's on the inland side, but we'll see how that works out. There's an inland water. It's kind of an island key system here. That's in this area, Fort Walton, I guess it is, area where we're at. And so we're gonna go to this dog park over there towards Fort Walton. It's in the other direction. It's a lot closer. This one's, the other one's about 30 miles away. This one's about 10 miles away. So we'll see how it goes. Anyway, that's what's happened. But yesterday I was working on the motor coach. And we had some issues with the hydraulic system. I couldn't figure out what was going on. Couldn't get the jack levelers down. And the back slide out operates on hydraulics. And it wasn't working. Couldn't get anything to happen. Couldn't get that part out. So we didn't have as much room back in the back room. And the coach was kind of bouncing around because it was there was no way to get the levelers working. Well, yesterday, was kind of thinking around. I did use ChatGPT to kind of explain the issue and asked the machine for some hints or help on the situation. ChatGPT did an awesome job. I also used Grok to type the same thing into the prompt. It was probably about 2 or 3 paragraphs long for the prompt, and it was. It came back with, I would say, a broader scope of what was going on. ChatGPT had more of an in-depth drill down on the things that it thought were the problem. Everything down to colors of wires and those kinds of things. It was very detailed with the things, but didn't give me as broad of a scope of what could possibly be wrong. Whereas I think Grok kind of gave me this wider range of things. And then it was kind of querying me about drilling down on particular issues. So in that respect, I think ChatGPT probably did a better job in this particular situation with the prompt that I gave it. Now I could have probably been more specific with Grok and actually asked for certain things, and it probably would have given me those, I'm sure. But its initial response was a little different. Nonetheless, found the problem, and it was a hint with some fusing that I thought the fuses. There's 3 different fuse panels up in the front of the coach, and of course there's some inline fuses and that kind of thing. The pump is up in the front, and I started checking around some things, looking at some things, and. Realizing that there are a couple of it's just a 5-amp fuse, and it's the one that sends a signal from the ignition system to ignite to basically light up the control panel and tell it, hey, it's everything's kosher, that you can go ahead and operate, and so it's kind of a safety system. It doesn't actually power the panel, but it sends a signal to the panel saying that it's. The key switch is on, everything's ready to go, and everything's kosher. And that little fuse was not operating properly. It was basically blown. And it was blown. Let's just put it that way. So I just put a new fuse in there, and everything worked fine. So they got that done. And because I got that done, I could get some other things done. I also put the water filtration system in. Had that installed the night before. Yeah, that actually ended up, that's been a real help because we can just use that for filling up water. We don't have to go bottle water, do all kinds of stuff like that. So it's just a whole lot different story. And when we don't have, it uses 110 power. It's an under the counter style reverse osmosis system. It has its own little pump and that kind of thing in it. It only operates on 110 and it's on demand. It doesn't have a buffer tank or anything. So it's a system that we have to have 110, which we can run the generator if we need to do that. But we also can just plug in somewhere and operate it that way, which is great when you're at the campsite or at an RV park, which we are at right now. Got that done. Got the other thing. I had a bunch of hooks up for hanging things. The amazing thing about this coach, and didn't have very many miles on it, we got it's 20 years old, but they never really did anything to this coach. There was not even a paper towel holder anywhere. Nothing was mounted to the wall, and they didn't do any kind of anything to tip. I don't think there's any extra additional screws. There was one place where I saw where they had stuck a Velcro, like a sticky back thing with a Velcro thing on it so that you could stick something on it. That's the only thing I found in this entire coach that was done aside to what the way it came originally from the factory, which is pretty amazing because I'm always cobbling things up when I get something. Even if it's brand new, I start cobbling it up right away. Hey, there needs to, you know, I need to drill a hole in the side of that truck, whatever it is. But I just, I'm on it, you know. So it's kind of like having a fresh canvas here for me, and I'm doing my job to make the next person wonder why I did all this stuff. But in the meantime, I got something wrong with my shoulder. Let's talk a little bit about Matt Waltz. That's a combination of Matt Walsh and Tim Waltz. We're going to talk about Tim Waltz. He said some things that I think need to be discussed, because it's disgusting what he said. He came out, tried to sound president. Now he read this. Now I've noticed he's been reading a lot of his speeches lately, and of course when he does that he gets this tone. He gets into this droning tone. He doesn't do the side talk as much as I've talked about the way Tim Waltz speaks and when he's off the cuff, when he's giving answers, when he's flailing with explanations, when he's under the gun and he's actually can tell this guy is in trouble and he knows it and he's trying to Jasmine, there's different people out there that I've heard talk, and whenever they're confronted with something, this is Fannie Willis, who I think was her name. She was very obvious when she was doing this. She would get this tone in her voice. She would do this thing where she was obviously guilty, obviously, and she would start throwing this thing back, trying to throw something back in someone's face. Sounded again like a junior high kid. And then this is the way they know most of them sound. They sound like junior high kids. They sound like 12-year-olds who are trying to weasel their way out of something that they know they did wrong, and they're trying to get them talk themselves out of it. And the more they talk, the worse they sound. And this is the way Tim Waltz is right now. He's doing the same thing. Now he has come out, of course, as this military guy that he is. Remember, he lied about his military service, by the way. But don't forget that he's lied about several things about the military and his commander position in the military. So it's been one thing after another with this guy. Now here is him talking. I think it was yesterday. I believe it was yesterday or the day before. I think it may have been before the shooting. I can't remember for sure. I think it was after the shooting. I think it was yesterday morning, maybe. And of course, the news media is all over it because Tim Waltz is going to speak. Now let's see what Tim Waltz has to say. Well, Tim Waltz, I think I don't know if he's going to go to jail, but I my understanding is he's under indictment, and the indictment has been referred to the DOJ now for prosecution. It's an interesting situation developing there. He sounded very tired the other day. And maybe one of the reasons he's reading this stuff is just because he's tired. He doesn't want to speak. His lawyer is telling him, you will read this. You will not get off topic. You will not go anywhere else. You will not answer any of the questions. He was told the other day, he told reporters the other day, that he was going to be making a speech and answering some questions. This is the day before the shooting. And he came out and spoke. And then he said, we'll answer questions at that time. And then he slammed his book shut and left. And everybody's standing around going, I thought he was going to answer questions now. He keeps pushing off the questions. The reason is because he can't talk off script right now. He's lawyered up. Some lawyers are telling him what to do right now. In fact, they're probably looking over all the statements. I don't know if he's typing out the statements or if they're typing them out for him, or if he's telling them what he wants to say and they're just making up the statement. And here you go. This is go out there and read this and do nothing else. Because that's the way he's acting right now. Now, here we have, this is a situation where this is what he came out to say. And of course, he's got a female officer standing behind him. And he's got, what's funny to me about this clip, and you can't see this on audio, so I apologize for that. This lady, This lady beside him is signing. Of course, they have to have the deaf, the impaired, you know, thing on the side. Can't just have closed captions. You have to have a because they have to, you know, virtue signal in every way possible. And of course, she is a minority, obviously. Not sure what. She's apparently a mix of several different things, so they can cover all the bases with one person. Now, I don't know if all the signs she's doing are correct or not, but her facial expression, she's adding, there's basically no, there's not really any emotional expressiveness on Tim Walz's face. She does it all for him, but she's definitely putting she's putting all kinds of facial, you have to see this. It's really worth watching. Now, this is courtesy of Brandon Lehman. He's a guy, I might not get it shut off before you hear his voice at the end. He's a guy that I subscribe to on YouTube. I think he puts out a show every day, at least one video a day, possibly two, I think, maybe. I always look forward to his stuff. It's pretty intense. He's just kind of a talker. He doesn't really have, he plays clips and does that kind of thing, but he's not a really heavy talker. Let's listen to what Governor Walz, soon to be not Governor Walz, has to say about what's going on with the subject.
Here on, I have a very simple message. We do not need any further help from the federal government. To Donald Trump and Kristi Noem, you've done enough. There's nothing more important than Minnesotan safety. I've issued a warning order to prepare the Minnesota National Guard. We have soldiers in training and prepared to be deployed if necessary. I remind you, a warning order is a heads up for folks. And these National Guard troops are our National Guard troops. They're teachers in your community. They're business owners. They're construction professionals. They are Minnesotans. Well, I said this yesterday. We've never been at war with our federal government. I think in this case that the National Guard is their main mission. They have a dual mission. There's the federal mission when they're under Title 10 orders, and then they're under Title 32 orders. And this warning order, there's nothing officially been done yet. If I am to activate them as the Commander-in-Chief of the Minnesota National Guard, I will issue the executive order to the Minnesota National Guard, and then they will be put in state duty status. To Americans who are watching this, if you're in Portland or you're in L.A. or you're in Chicago or you're wherever they're coming next, stand with us. Stand with us against this.
Now this is, again, notice this. The cities he said there are all sanctuary cities. There's no such thing as a sanctuary city. This is a construct that they've made up. This is not something that is legal. This is like saying, well, we're just going to ignore federal law in this particular territory. This is like having the area in Seattle, or was it Seattle or Oregon, wherever it was. It was a no-go zone for police. The thatch zone, whatever it was. And of course, it was a mess. There were all kinds of course, there was rapes and killings and all kinds of things that happened within that no-go zone for the police. And it's there was no law and order. It was all, you know, Wild West kind of chaotic anarchy is what it was. That's what a lot of these people are. What you don't realize is that a lot of these radical leftists, the ones that are really on the left, they go beyond Marxism. They go into what I would call anarchism. They're feeding the frenzy. They're most of Antifa would probably be considered anarchists. Now, when you study anarchism, it's not necessarily, when you think of anarchy, you think of lawless, just craziness. It's just crazy. There is, within the anarchist philosophy ideology, there actually is a system of justice. However, it is not a centralized ideal. It's very different than what you would consider. You know, you system of justice in one territory might be different than another. It's tribalism, is what it is. It's all a bunch of tribes, and one tribe has one area might have a different sense of justice than another. They're not based on anything; just based on community, mob rule kind of justice. What's happening here? Let's get back to more importantly. What he's talking about with this whole thing about activating the National Guard. I think he's going to have a problem on a lot of different levels. Now, notice he hasn't done anything officially yet. He's just threatening to activate the National Guard as a state entity, which I think is what he said, Title 32, whatever it is. Title 10 is under the federal thing, and the title, whatever it is. He's throwing out a bunch of legal speak, and of course, I'm not a lawyer. Now, my understanding here is this is a guy, first of all, who's under the gun for other things because of all the fraud, because of all the other issues. He has come out swinging with all the racist, you know, white supremacy rhetoric that you would expect. Because when they're caught, when they're wrong, they just call you a racist and a white supremacist, and they move on. Because that's supposed to be the trump card they always play. Now, he's also, at the same time, of course, now we have this situation where they've refused to help ICE agents. They've refused to have officers, you know, helping with the situations. So you get this situation where these ICE agents are trying to do their job. They have no backup. They can't call the police. The police won't show up. And so they have to handle things on their own. This doubles their job that they have to do. And now, Adam Schiff, I wanted to play this clip from Adam Schiff. I don't have it handy right now. Adam Schiff comes out and says, this lady was just she was just picking up her kids from school. I kind of made a joke about that yesterday, about how they're going to say that she was just, you know, picking up her kids from school or dropping her kids off at school or whatever it was, and just happened to get caught up in this thing and was trying to get, you know, trying to get around some traffic, and she got stuck, and they just shot her. That's exactly what they're trying. Adam Schiff basically came out and said that very thing. I just heard it this morning. He apparently came out and said, this lady was just, she was just dropping her kids off. She just wanted to see her kids from school. And she got, you know, she was trying to wave people around her, and she was trying to go around this car. And then she tried to get away from the police because she got scared, and they shot her dead. It's just some mom, you know, trying to do her thing. Just an everyday mom out there with her minivan. Yeah, that's not what happened at all. Okay, this lady and her wife were there. Her wife was doing the video of the event that most of us are seeing right now, the whole thing. Everybody's talking about, oh, the wheels were turned this way. They were turned away from the officer. They weren't turned towards the officer. Can't tell which way. It's just look. Do I think that I would have responded the same way? I don't think I would have responded the same way. However, I was not in the situation. You don't know what led up to this. You don't know how intense this situation might have been. My understanding was a little bit earlier on in the situation. And by the way, this lady has been all over town as an anti-ICE. It's a disruptor. Her and her wife have been doing that. The whole situation was much more intense than what they're making it out to be. Maybe she was just trying to get away. I don't know what her intent was. Personally, I don't think her intent was to run over the officer. I think her intent was she was panicking. She wanted to get out of there, and I don't think she would have cared if she would have hit somebody on the way out. I think if she would have ran into the officer or ran over the officer, she would have kept going. She was that scared of the situation. She was that petrified of getting caught, knowing that what she was doing is wrong. She was parked perpendicular in the street. Make no mistake about it. She was trying to block traffic. She was trying to keep the ICE agents from doing whatever they were doing. They're impeding officers. And it turned into a situation where, unfortunately, she was in a situation, she was doing things she shouldn't have been doing. The officer did what he thought was best at the right at that moment. There was definitely a plausible reason for him to use lethal force. I can't put myself in his shoes. That's ridiculous. I guarantee you, this goes to court, depending on what court it is, he will walk away as a justified situation. Now, they'll be very intense on every little thing that's going on here. He needs to get his lawyer, his statements all in the line here, because they're going to try to misalign everything that happened there. My understanding is one officer actually did have his foot run over. The wheels were spinning, so she was hitting the accelerator. The officer that was in in line with the car was the one that my understanding was the one who shot did the shooting, and she was told to stand down. She was told to get out of the car. She didn't do it. She refused orders. She kept on going. Did not comply. And yet they're sticking up for this lady just like they're going to stick up for that. There are people on the left right now. I can play video for you, audio for you, of people who are protesting that Maduro is here locked up, and that they're protesting the fact that he's locked up here in the States. And they're actually saying he would make a better president than the one we have now. He was a great dictator. He's a great leader. We need to have him here. I'd vote for him for president. Multiple people on the left are saying that. This is where Trump derangement syndrome, it shows the symptoms very plainly. That there's a real serious issue with these people mentally, and in my opinion, it has been fed by the media, fed by all this. You know, for years and years and years, they've heard nothing about this guy other than he's just some kind of monster. And it's just one thing after another. And of course, it doesn't help that someone now has died in this conflict, but I place the blame squarely at the feet of the local politicians in Minnesota and those who've just continued to drum up and stir up all the issues. And it doesn't help that the mayor of the city now has come out and said, get the F out of Minnesota, or out of Minneapolis, whatever he said. It doesn't help at all. I do not understand how he thinks that is going to decrease the rhetoric. It's just the intensity of the situation. And of course now they're finding out. And overnight, by the way, everybody has signs that are all printed the same. They're all out there protesting in the streets and all the sanctuary cities and all the places that you would expect them to be protesting. And guess what? It's all obviously paid protesting. In fact, they were probably waiting for an event, waiting for something to happen. And then they were kind of standing by waiting for whatever it was going to be that was going to happen, that they could just, okay, now we got to take to the streets. Time to go out there. Start doing our thing. Because these people aren't employed gainfully anywhere else anyway in their situation. So it's kind of a really weird. Now, remember, if you watch any of the Nick Shirley video, there's this one instance where they were out in front of this one place and they were knocking on the door. Nobody, I think it might have been the Lyric Center. And it was, they were out there asking them, this one lady shows up with her phone and she sticks her phone in their faces and she won't answer. She won't have a discussion with them at all. There's just two guys standing out there in front of this thing with a camera guy, three people there basically. Got a cameraman and two people and they're going on and they're knocking on the door trying to get some answers about, you know, sending little Joey to daycare. And she comes out, she sticks this camera in her face. There's nobody else around at all. It's like there's nobody even on the street walking around. And she goes, "Don't come out. Don't come out. It's ICE. Don't come out. ICE. Don't come out. Don't open up," or whatever she said. "Don't open up." And so okay, these guys, they're not ICE agents. And he's just a YouTuber, and he tries to explain that to her. He tries to have a conversation with her, and she just keeps screaming that. And then she says, "You have no right to be here. You don't belong here." Oh, really? So the illegal aliens are trying to protect by saying this is, you know, because apparently she knows that there's illegal aliens there, illegal immigrants, and she's trying to protect them. They have a right to be there, but these people who pay taxes and who our U.S. citizens have no right to be in a public access. That's how ridiculously deranged these people are. It really gets old after a while. Well, anyway, this show is going to go a little bit longer than normal. I think we're going to hit our 30-minute point here. I've already still just been ranting and raving this whole time, and obviously the ice machine has just kicked in over there. So anyway, we'll talk more about this next week. I will have a very busy week next week. I have to leave very, very early on Monday morning. However, Monday's going to be a very busy day. I got a lot of traveling to do on Monday. I'll be all over the country. I'm not even sure what time I get done on Monday night. So there probably won't be a show at all on Monday. Hopefully nothing too crazy happens over the weekend. However, yeah, I think I work all day long. I end up in Tallahassee. Now the next day, it's a very short night in Tallahassee, and then I end up in Wichita, Kansas on Tuesday, and I probably will have a show in Wichita in the afternoon. And then on Wednesday, again, it'll be late in the day, probably afternoon before I get a show in as well. Hopefully around noontime or a little after. Actually, it's going to be noon Wichita time, which is central time. So it'll be late afternoon by the time I get a show done, if I get one done at all on Tuesday. It may be maybe late. What I might do is do a show on Tuesday that I'll post on Wednesday. I might just do something like that. Or I might do a show Sunday night, depending what happens, that I will be posting on Monday morning. So there might be a show Monday morning. We'll see how it all works out. In the meantime, I want to talk a little bit about global economics, just a general overview of what's happening, what I see happening, and kind of the future of what I see happening. I talked at the beginning of the year kind of how I was going to change the format a little bit before all this stuff started happening. Into kind of a what does the future hold for us in terms of technology, finances, global economics, all the other topics that I talk about, and things that I speak about. And so one of the things I want to talk about is the global scene right now, what's happened, in the kind of the realignment that we're seeing. One of the things that I think so let's just take an overview here. Let's look at what's going on in the world. We have a war that's winding down, or military kinetic action that's winding down in the Middle East with Israel, Gaza, that entire thing. And I don't want to get into the politics of what's happened there, who's right, who's wrong. I'm just saying that that's winding down. So you've got that happening. At the same time, you have the whole thing between Russia and Ukraine is kind of at a very slow pace right now. They have some slight escalations here and there. Most of it's been the kinetic activity has been very slow. Ukraine has suffered a lot. Both sides have lost a lot of people. One of the things that I think has happened in the balance of power there is, now there's also been some other wars that have actually found some peace agreements in the world. I think there's been like 11 different conflicts that have been resolved by the Trump administration right now. Been very busy and active in helping to negotiate and settle deals with rivals around the world. And so that's not being talked about at all. There's just been a whole lot of things done in that respect. The tariff issue, throw that into the mix of everything that's going on as well. So the trade issue and some of the things that are happening there are very interesting. How that has affected the balance of economic trade around the world between other countries, not just ours, but other countries as well. Because when you step in and you create a tariff, now it readjusts some things in terms of supply and demand. It makes other countries available now that are willing to manufacture something, or makes their tariff a better deal. So maybe India now is a better place to buy a product than it is from China or from Turkey or wherever it is that something else is manufactured. It rebalances the entire playing field there. The other thing that happens with the tariffs is because of the negotiations with the tariffs, countries that have large businesses and even some small businesses. They talk about the billion-dollar deals. They don't talk about all the little million-dollar deals here and there, where you have a company that will come in and put a factory here in the United States. So now you're talking about somebody coming in saying, we're going to put $1 trillion of investment into the United States. We're going to put in the infrastructure. We're going to build a building there. They're going to employ U.S. people to work in that factory and that whole thing. The economics of that, the infrastructure, the development It's a huge thing to kind of come in and dump that kind of money into our property here. So and it's what we need. It's what we need. We need that kind of thing. It has some positive and negative effects on the economic situation, but it's at the same time it's an incredibly huge deal for our economic situation as well as their economic situation. Now, in terms of general job growth, just everything around that that surrounds that is a huge deal because you have manufacturing. It's not just the 500 jobs that come in. Like I've said before, it's not just the 500 jobs that come in or the 1,000 jobs that come in. It's the all the things that happen around that, the construction companies, the technicians, the people who support all those workers, all things around all of that, that actually grow up around that kind of a business, that kind of a manufacturing facility. So it's just a lot of things happening there. Now, at the same time, you have. My hope is that we can keep up with that, with the demand to supply enough workers. Hopefully, the people step up and start working. That's because there are a lot of people who just aren't working right now, just out of choice. Now, same time, we have a situation where we have a lot of still supply and demand issues that are out there. And this is, again, another issue of the caboose effect in terms of where things are moved around. Venezuela, by the way, probably one of the richest, potentially richest nations on the planet with regard to natural resources. They have more oil than Saudi Arabia. They have a huge amount of gold reserves underground that they just don't have the equipment or the ability to mine out of there. The oil reserves they have in the ground, the oil and shale and coal reserves that they have there, natural gas, they're unable as well because they've let their infrastructure crumble. What happened was they came in and seized all the property from BP and all the other oil companies, and then kicked the people out that were running it. Well, they didn't have anybody; they didn't have technicians to run that thing. So everything fell apart. That's why they're at 18% or less of production from where they were. Simply a really bad situation for their. Economically, it's a very bad situation. So you have all this balance of power stuff happening. And of course, now their agreement with Russia was they would sell Russia oil. If you remember back in the day, there were airplanes and ships and everything else landing in Venezuela, and they were having all these negotiations and talks and everything else. What ended up happening there was they had. Made an agreement basically to sell oil to Russia and Iran and now what's weird here is that Russia and Iran have oil. What they're doing is they're flooding the global market and using it to trade. They're buying it at basically $20 a barrel and they're selling it for whatever it is on the market, $50 a barrel. In exchange for that, what they were told was that they would give them protection. Basically, this was okay. We'll make sure we protect you. We'll give you arms. We'll sell you whatever you need. We'll give you whatever you need for we'll protect you. Well, Russia's not that close to Venezuela. They're much closer to Miami than they are to Russia. So the issue was how are you going to do that? They didn't see it that way. They just thought they were part of the club, part of the communist club that was they're all going to be the anti. U.S. part of this whole thing, so they slipped themselves out from under that. Thought they were going to be we're just going to have all this money flowing. We're going to be rich. We're going to be I'll get all this capital. We're going to pay the people. Let them eat cake, kind of thing. We're going to give them little crumbs from this to keep them pacified. Of course, when that all fell apart, much like the free buses in New York are falling apart right now with Mamdani, day one of his. Mayoralship, by the way, bus rates went up, and he was all upset because what he didn't bother to tell anybody during the campaign was he does not control bus fares. His administration does not control bus fares; it's controlled by the state. And Hochul is not going along with it. Now, Hochul was the one he needed to convince, not the people. Of course, he just had to convince the people that buses are going to be free and fast, and the Of course, they voted him in because, you know, free, no more rent going up. So they vote for the guy, and then they find out, oh, he can't do anything about it. Of course, then when you start doing all the other stuff with property and rent controls and all those kinds of things, all of a sudden, fewer and fewer places are available. Because people start closing down, which the problem is inventory. There's not enough rental places because the city has made it so difficult to have a rental property there. So it's one thing after another that the government has screwed things up there. Don't get me wrong. It's not the capitalists that have made it bad. It's the government that's made it bad. And you can go on YouTube and find myriads of people who talk about their experience in owning rental properties in New York, or even construction contractors who are trying to build anything in New York City, by the way, that's what I'm talking about. So there's just all kinds of red tape. They just get involved in everything. And of course, now that with the political bent of it being that it needs to be free, that's just, you know, it needs to be affordable. And everything's affordability is the key word. They obviously did a lot of research in their little focus groups about what word. Affordability. That's the new word. That's the new buzzword, and so that's what they're using all over the place. Of course, that's now kind of run its course. You'll still hear it a little bit. It'll make another reprieve, I'm sure, at some point, probably as we get closer to the elections this year. Affordability will be another. You know, it'll be one of those buzzwords that throughout the last year that they've used. There'd be several different things like that. In the meantime. So they're blaming everything on Trump. They're blaming everything on the world economic situation. Of course, now we're being told that the world leaders are don't like Trump. They don't, you know, they're all against him, all that kind of thing. That's not the case at all. That's what we're being told. So now the reality is there's some that are and some that aren't. Every administration, doesn't matter Republican or Democrat, there's always going to be world leaders that don't like our leader. Now, the whole Maduro thing has thrown a kind of an interesting twist into all of this, because what's going to happen is, as we go back in and start to re-establish the oil industry back there, back in Venezuela, and then hopefully, you know, establish an economic stability in Venezuela by doing so, it's going to take years, by the way, they claim. Now, I don't know. They claim that, oh, it's going to take 10 years to get the oil, you know, refineries or the oil production back up to where it was. I don't think so. I think it can be done in 2 years. I'm not sure. I think just the positiveness of having it start back into place. I think you'd be surprised what can happen if they just get out of the way. If the, you know, environmentalists and everything else get out of the way, we can get this thing done. Pretty quickly, as far as like the U.S. businesses that are going back in there to do this, I think that can happen pretty quickly. Now, we were told that it was going to take years and years and years to get the oil wells that that Iraq had blown up in Kuwait. It was going to take years to get those fixed, and some contractor guy went in and just started doing it. I think within months, I think it was 4 or 5 months later, all the oil well fires were put out. They came in with a, you know, they didn't have an environmentalist telling them what they couldn't do, and they just were able to get it done. So we'll see how this works out now with Venezuela as well. Of course, they're making a lot of jokes about how this is all about the oil. Well, it is about the oil, but it's also about that is Venezuela's biggest economic engine there, and they've got to get that in line. And I think that's where people are joking about it, but it's the Venezuelan people, it's their biggest asset that will make them prosperous. In the meantime, the whole world economic situation right now, we're going to see oil prices drop. Now, this is oil companies, of course, don't want to see that. However, they'll still make their profit margin. This is where you don't always see the people always talk about how, oh, they don't want the oil prices to drop. Well, the reason the oil prices are high is because of for a number of reasons. And It does not necessarily mean they're making more money on a profit margin just because the oil prices, the oil price per barrel is up. There's still other issues involved in all of that, and it's now if oil is at $20 a barrel, it does trickle down and trickles back. You'll see a deflation of some things, and deflation is not a bad thing. Inflation has always been called, well, you can't have deflation. You're going to have the deflation of the dollar. You know, the value of the dollar goes up when you have deflation. If it's done properly, you can actually see the value of the dollar go up during a deflationary period. And it doesn't necessarily mean, and that might mean the value of your home goes down, but the value of your dollar goes up. So it's one of those things where you sell your house for $100,000 now. That's kind of a ridiculously low price for a house. Sell your house for $100,000. Now I'm just using it as an example. And you have a deflationary period where you can buy that same house again for $80,000. What have you done there? Now you have $20,000 in your pocket. And that $20,000 that would have bought you a nice used car might buy you a new car now. A much newer car. So it's just... it's one of those things where we cease to think, because this country lives on debt. Everybody has a mortgage on their car, a mortgage on their house, mortgage on their furniture. They rent to own. They do all this. Nobody owns anything. They're basically paying rent for everything. And the same thing with a car payment. You're paying. It's just a ridiculous thing to have. I would never have thought that, but. Years ago, I was always just kind of did it out of necessity, but I didn't realize how ridiculous that car loans are. You're basically paying the bank. You're renting something basically from the bank. You could have one car payment left. If you don't make it, they'll come and take your car. Who owns the car? Well, they do. That's the bottom line. And it's of course by that point your car might not be worth anything. Even if they do repossess it, they're going to take it, and they're still going to ask for their money, and so, which is ridiculous as well. They're going to sell it. Say you owe $1,000 on your car, they take it and they sell it for $500. They're still going to say you owe us $500. So you still got to pay for the car that you don't have now. So it's kind of one of those ridiculous things. It's a racket. So, folks, I want to thank you for listening this week. Thanks for listening to. Me rant. Now, if you would like to share your thoughts about my thoughts, you may do that. And you can call 812-379-8778. You can also text that number with a question, comment, thought, comment, whatever. You can say, hey, what you said was stupid, or what you said was brilliant. Hopefully the latter, the two. Or you can ask a question, or you can give me a suggestion on a particular topic for Topical Tuesday that you might like. I would love to hear you talk about. We have Mishmash Monday, Topical Tuesday, Wishy Washy Wednesday, Thirsty Thursday, and Financial Friday. So I don't want any of those things to mean. So it's just a rambling guy on YouTube or on whatever. Yeah. Folks, once again, thanks for listening. Shabbat Shalom. Take care. I will hopefully have a show on Monday, possibly, or Tuesday. Wednesday. God bless.